Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Lob Podcast from These Football Times. My name's Gary Thacker, and we're back with Series 2 of Mount Rushmore, where we ask invited guests to select four players, one goalkeeper, one defender, one midfielder, and one forward, who they believe deserve to be immortalised on their club's very own Mount Rushmore monument. It's not necessarily about the best players, the longest serving, or the top goal scorer. It's for each guest to choose their own criteria and the players that they feel are the most deserving. Before we introduce this week's guest, however, I'd love to say a little bit himself about himself and the club he's chosen his players from. I need to introduce our two co-hosts. So, firstly, Aidan Williams, COVID sufferer, Newcastle fan, victory. So things aren't too bad, buddy. How are you going?
Things are on the up. They're on the up on the football field and with COVID. I may still be positive, but my voice, I think, is a bit better than it was a couple of nights ago when we last spoke. So all good. And even my camera's working. Everything's going so much better today. So very much looking forward to this one. Fiorentina, an epic club, great club that we've talked about. We've done magazines on. We've talked about at length, and it's a really fascinating topic. So many great players to look at.
Indeed.
It'll be interesting to see the picks and the rationale behind them.
Grand. And here's a seamless segue into our second co-host. There's only one club scored more points in 2022 than Newcastle United, and that's Liverpool, who won the derby today, and a beaming Stevie Scragg, who was there and is now joining us. How are you doing, Stevie?
Oh, yeah, skimming at the last minute. My throat's not so great, but that's more less COVID and more shouting at the football. And, a pleasing day at the footballing office today.
Good stuff, buddy, good stuff. Right, so just moving on to our guest. Our guest today is Giancarlo Rinaldi. He's been writing about Italian football for more than 30 years, starting with the Fanzine Rigore, before moving on to Football Italia magazine and a website, and producing three books on the subject. He's now also one half of the Rigore podcast with his cousin Marco and lives in Scotland, but his family is from Tuscany, hence the support for Fiorentina. Giancarlo, welcome. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself that we have filled a few gaps in, and why Fiorentina?
Well, yeah, I mean, the name gives you a clue, really, to the accent doesn't, but the name does, as to why I support Fiorentina. I was born and brought up in Scotland, but the family's from Tuscany. A little village called Barga, which a lot of Scottish Italians are from. And when I was about 12 years old, in fact, younger than that, we went over for family holidays. And it just so happened that there's a big sports complex near Barga where some teams do their pre-season called Il Ciocco, which I think actually Everton have been there, not to provoke any ire from other hosts, but Rangers, Kilmarnock, a lot of British teams have done their pre-season there as well. But it happened that when I was an impressionable youth many years ago, Fiorentina did their pre-season there, and my local team in Scotland is Queen of the South, so I've suffered quite a lot with them. And to see these sort of gods descend from the hillside. This was in sort of early 80s, so Fiorentina had a number of, they were future World Cup winners at that time, and then they came back after they'd won the World Cup, and so, you know, these were, came into the village, and the women swooned, and the men did too, really. You know, it was amazing to be in a little village, and they played a pre-season game against the kind of the local side and thrashed them 48-1 or something, and everyone thought this was amazing. But I just fell in love, I think, as a lot of people do, with the purple strip, really, as well, and that was it, really. From then on, they were my Italian team. They were the nearest team, really, the nearest big team, anyway, to where the family's from. And, you know, I've followed them through thin and thinner ever since.
I mean, it's certainly an iconic club, and we covered Fiorentina in one of our magazines a few editions back. But interesting you mentioned about Queen of the South. Queen of the South as a club, well, as the name, has a certain religious distinction. I'm not sure if you know what that is.
Well, we claim to be the only team in the Bible. That's
correct.
That's even in the club song. We sing that with a terrible rhyme that involves viable and Bible rhyming with one another. But I think the Queen of the South shall rise again is concealed somewhere in the Bible. So and often that can be Queen of the South's only claim to fame, really.
I was going to say, have you been waiting for this rise since then?
Pretty much. Although I mean, it's sad times because I think you guys probably all had victories over the weekend, but Queen of the South just got relegated to League One at the weekend. We drew with Ayr United, and that sealed our fate. After nearly 10 years in the Scottish Championship, we're going down to League One, and Fiorentina managed to lose as well. So it's been a pretty tough weekend for me. So Queen of the South, the local team, I'm a season ticket holder there as well. So but we've actually in comparative terms the last decade's been pretty amazing for Queen of the South. Sadly back down to the third tier of Scottish football now.
Okay, well let's see if we can pick up the your weekend for you, and the sort of neatly gloss over the rhyming of Bible and viable. I mean, a little bit of poetic license there. But let's wait for the Queen of the South to rise again and put that to one side for a second. We're going to talk about Fiorentina. So let's start off with goalkeeper. Before you give us your choice, Giancarlo, who was close? Who came, who was in the running to the end?
Oh, well, I mean, there were a few good goalkeepers. I tried to stick mostly with players that I'd seen play, because I mean my dad would tell me that guys like Malbertosi were and Giuliano Sarti were great goalkeepers for Fiorentina, and people that remember the great Inter side will remember Sarti as well. He was played there, and Albertosi I think won back to back Scudetti with Fiorentina and Cagliari. But although I am quite old and the hairline is what it is, I don't really remember them playing. The first goalkeeper I can really remember for Fiorentina who would have entered this mix, I think, would have been Giovanni Galli, who played for Italy as well at the couple of World Cups, I think. I mean, he didn't play particularly well for Italy. In fact, at one stage, I think one World Cup, he was nicknamed Two Shots, Two Goals, which is not a great nickname for a goalkeeper. But for Fiorentina, he was a pretty solid shot stopper, and he was also a Tuscan as well, which that kind of endeared him to the Fiorentina fans too. So he was definitely one that was in the mix. Another who'd be more familiar probably to British football fans was Artur Boruc, the holy goalie. As he was known, famous, very, very popular with Celtic fans, and had a few seasons at Fiorentina as well, and did pull off some amazing saves, but he probably felt he wasn't there for long enough, really, to, a bit of a cult hero, perhaps, but not really, for me anyway, the greatest that I've ever seen. But the closest, certainly, to kind of ousting who I have chosen was probably Sebastian Frey, who played for Inter Milan, but was an absolute legend for Fiorentina during European games as well. There's a chant about him which is a bit rude, but it suggests that how much success you would have with women if you had Sebastian Frey's hair. So I'll not go into the gory details of the chant, but he was an absolute legend for Fiorentina. Frey, he played with Inter as well, played with Parma too. But I think he does say that his heart was left in Florence, and he was part of some great European seasons for Fiorentina as well. So those were the names that kind of came close, but to me, they were all just a step down from the person that I've chosen.
Well, there's certainly some famous and celebrated names that you've gone through, so this guy must be something special. So who's your choice of goalkeeper, Giancarlo?
I went for Francesco Toldo, which, again, is maybe not the best-known goalkeeper to UK listeners, but to Serie A listeners, he was an institution in Florence for a long, long time. He'd started out, actually, at Milan, and it was a funny one because he was part of squads in that kind of great Milan era, but because they had so many choices, he was kind of surplus to requirements. So really, you know, kind of Milan's excesses were Fiorentina's blessing, really, in a sense, because they weren't that keen on having him. Fiorentina were, and Fiorentina got him, and he really, you know, he for the best part of a decade, he was a legendary shot stopper. I think probably his finest hour, actually, unlike Galli, was possibly with the national team. May remember the game with the Netherlands where he saved penalties during the game, and then Italy won on penalties at the end, and he saved more. And I don't know, I lost count of the number of penalties he saved, but he did play, you know, a big part for Fiorentina and the sort of times of Battistuta came over and saved penalties here as well in the UK. Played against Arsenal, had a great game, and you know, it just was, I think he was a new type of goalkeeper for Italian football as well, really, because I don't remember prior to him there being that many big, tall goalkeepers. Most goalkeepers, if you think of Dino Zoff or, you know, the Peruzzis, they were all quite small goalkeepers, really, comparative to now, whereas we've seen the progression of goalkeepers to being these kind of giant figures, and he was the first one I'd really seen, certainly at Fiorentina, that was, you know, a big, tall guy. I'm not sure if he was 6'5", 6'6". He was certainly a tall guy, but amazingly agile as well. And that really, you know, it obviously coincided with a really good Fiorentina side as well that was able to get into the Champions League. And, you know, as with all Fiorentina teams, it didn't win a lot, but they were a good team. And he was kind of the top man in goals at that time. As I say, I'd never seen a guy that was that big and that agile at the same time. And so that was what really edged it for me, that he just was something out of the ordinary. He went on to win trophies with Inter after he left Fiorentina. But, you know, for a long time, he was a mainstay of the Fiorentina defence and an absolute star for us.
Sure. Come to you first, Stevie. Last week we were talking about a team far less celebrated, shall we say, than Fiorentina, and perhaps discussing names that would be less known to listeners. That's not the case today. And even with the goalkeepers, we're away and running, aren't we?
Oh, definitely. And I think, you know, we've said before about how certain clubs will be blessed in certain areas, and that's amazing thing will be throughout this podcast is just how blessed Fiorentina have been in all departments, yet they've not managed to drag it together collectively as often as they should have done, really. And maybe goalkeeper is possibly the strongest area that they've ever had. You know, Enrique Albertosa is mentioned there early on, and, you know, he's a goalkeeper that I was always fascinated with because you'd see his name attached to the 1970 World Cup. And, you know, you knew Dino Zoff was around at that point in time. Zoff had played in the 1968 European Championship. So who is this intruder on Dino Zoff's career almost? And then as you know, I wrote an article about him for These Football Times, and, you know, a fascinating character that you know, won league titles with, went on to win it with Milan as well. You know, went to four World Cups. You know, there was a petition for him to go to a fifth. But yeah, you know, before my time, but someone utterly fascinated with, and then you find out about Giuliano Sarti, and then, yeah, Toldo just falls straight into this litany of great goalkeepers. And Toldo, I think, was a wonderful goalkeeper. You know, I always remember, it's bizarre to say it now, but I always felt at a point in time and in his earlier part of his career that Buffon was something of a show pony of a goalkeeper almost. that he was, you know, a lot of saves for the camera, you know, pushing the ball away when he could have caught it, and you know, stuff like that. There was a touch of the, his name's going to slip my mind now. He was the Sampdoria's goalkeeper, title winning side, and went on to play for Inter. Paluca, you know, he ticked that box as well for me. Was that, you know, he'd punch when he could catch. It was just, you know, saves for the camera almost. And obviously Buffon went on to mature as a wonderful goalkeeper. But Euro 2000, when Toldo played, you know, I think Italy came through to get so close to winning that competition because of Toldo. He was the foundation of that side. And when Fiorentina had, you know, a wonderful service from him.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, don't you, Aidan? I mean, obviously, Steve sings the praises of Toldo, much as Giancarlo. I remember one of the names mentioned, Giovanni Sarti, who played for Bernardini's Viola. Wonderful goalkeeper and played in the 67 European Cup final against Celtic. What are your thoughts on Toldo and the goalkeepers that Giancarlo mentioned them?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, Steve's talked about Albertozzi there, and my memories of that are similar, sort of knowing him from the 1970 World Cup. The mention of Galli is interesting because I do remember seeing him in 86 and thinking he was a bit flaky. I think he was it against Argentina in the group where there was a goal where he pretty much stood and watched the ball go past him from an angle. And I distinctly recall the punditry discussions afterwards questioning all Italian goalkeepers based on that, which seemed a little harsh. And I'm sure that my rash judgment based on that is incredibly harsh on Galli as well. Because to have even got to that position of Italian goalkeepers tells you something. And that's the same about Toldo. The Euro 2000 game that Giancarlo mentioned there is obviously the one that sticks in the mind when you think of Francesco Toldo. I guess it's a shame that the final went the way it did, because the last minute equaliser from Sylvain Wiltord in the final, Toldo possibly could have got down slightly quicker or got his hand there. But in your mind, you don't really recall that about France winning that final against Italy. You don't see it that way. When you remember Toldo in Euro 2000, you remember the heroics in the semi-final. And that's good. That's good, because that should outweigh a very minor infraction possibly in the final. That serves him better. But I think you're talking, Gary, about the contrast to some of the others we've had on this series so far. We've gone through lower league teams and a sort of lower top flight team, if we're being generous, I guess. But now the similarities again, I think, with somebody we talked about the other day on the last pod in terms of misfortune of timing. We talked about that a bit with Ian Wright in terms of his international selection and limited opportunity, and how that was largely due to the sort of abilities of others and the strengths in depth in that position. I think Toldo was probably very unfortunate in that, despite being one of Italy's finest goalkeepers and probably one of the finest for quite some time, he was at a time where there were several like that. So obviously Buffon being the biggest one, as Steve said, the crossover is very much early Buffon rather than prime Buffon. But obviously that still had an impact on him internationally. We've mentioned Paluca. There was also Peruzzi, Abbiati, Marchegiani, people like this at that time in the 90s. All these names would be so familiar to so many people in this country from watching Football Italia and Gazzetta and so on. There really was a lot of strength and depth in Italian goalkeeping at that time. And Toldo was right up there with it. He was unfortunate not to really get a sustained spell as top choice for Italy. Euro 2000 came away by fortune as well, because Buffon broke his hand about a week or two prior to the tournament. So it's only really because of that that Toldo got his place as the starting keeper. Obviously, he was going to be in the squad as the backup regardless. And yet he produced those heroics and, as you say, was the foundation of getting them all the way through the final and within a matter of moments of winning it. So that it's unfortunate, but equally to be able to step into the breach in such a situation and deliver the way he did shows that despite maybe never being the top man, he was still one of the top goalkeepers around and probably one of the top in the world at the time. That just shows the depth that he was up against. So it's a little unfortunate from those respects, but I guess that shows that he was one of the finest around, and he was able to hold his own there. And Fiorentina, obviously a great servant for the club. And it's a shame that we get so many of these tales. I'm familiar with this anyway. Players doing well-ish at your club, and they're moving somewhere else to win stuff. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but I mean, obviously, the one of the things I mentioned is Toldo did win two Coppa Italias, I think, with the Fiorentina. So, you know, as well as sort of coming to the top of the, you know, even the Fiorentina goalkeepers we've discussed there, you know, I think that's he's earned his place on Mount Rushmore. So we're going to put the goalkeeper place to Francesco Toldo.
Are we allowed to inscribe the chant for Sebastian Fry underneath him just to sort of make so we can all see what says?
We're going to put it in Italian though, so hopefully we'll pick it up. I'll ask Giancarlo to tell me afterwards. And when I do the carving, I'll put it in italics. Yeah, we'll see, and I'll use the asterisk very sort of selectively. If Serie A is known about for anything with really, this, the strength of the defenders, so when we're talking about Italian clubs and the defenders who sort of shine, this is the sort of the peak of the peak, as it were. So looking at defenders for Fiorentina, Giancarlo, who was a sort of near misses, shall we say?
This was tough as well. It was all tough to be honest with you. I mean, I was going back to one of the first players I remember playing in defence for Fiorentina. Certainly when foreign players were banned for a lot of the from the late 60s through the 70s until 1980, really. And when the barrier was lifted, one of the first players to come Fiorentina was Daniel Passarella, an absolutely amazing player. Now, I mean, I was a bit young to remember him, but nonetheless, you know, still spoken of very reverentially by Fiorentina fans, and a master. I think when in those days when you started, they started with just one foreign player, then you were allowed two, and then in time most people remember maybe as when you had three foreign players in your side. But, you know, I think at that point, clubs chose a little more wisely, or they spent a little more time, you know, and it really was Serie A. When you look back, I mean, there are some oddballs in there, but by and large, the foreign players they brought in were the creme de la creme. They were your sort of Zicos and Socrates, you know, another player that didn't work out so well at Fiorentina, but Passarella did. We love an Argentinian, and you know he was certainly one who, you know, as I say, going back to sort of the earliest memories I had, he was a name that I thought had to be considered. Others were more recent times. I'd probably had around about the Toldo time was a guy who I loved his story as much as his swashbuckling style of play. It was Moreno Torricelli, who, you know, a lot of Fiorentina fans didn't like or were sceptical about because of his Juve roots, but he actually turned out to be an amazing acquisition for Fiorentina, and great galloping down the wing, which has been a problem position for Fiorentina in more recent times, you know, so a lot of fond memories of him. Down the other flank, Manuel Pascual, who was captain of Fiorentina, bringing things more up to speed, played for Italy as well quite a few times. Not a very fashionable player, really, but a guy that always gave 100% for Fiorentina. And, you know, I'd always thought he was a bit underrated, really, in overall Serie A terms. And going back to the Argentinians again, the guy who for about 10 years in FIFA was known as the young defender, Gonzalo Rodriguez, who was absolutely amazing defender for Fiorentina and marshalling that defence, scored a lot of goals as well. You know, really had an eye for coming forward. And I think memory serves, not bad on the guitar as well. I think it was one of his things, but I mean, he played a lot of games for Fiorentina and was, you know, a real leader. I think that is the thing you get with a lot of, certainly the Argentinian defenders that have come Fiorentina's way, was that, you know, they bring an extra element to a defence. You know, he was elegant, but he was strong as well. And it was you know, he pushed my selection really all the way, and it was perhaps more emotional than football and things that finally swayed my decision on who to pick.
Okay, then. So, given that, then let's have the name.
I went for Davide Astori, and it's a very sentimental pick, really, because I guess you could have put him on Mount Rushmore for certainly for Cagliari, possibly for Roma as well. But you know, just such a quiet leader of the Fiorentina team, really, and tragically it died. Fiorentina were away to play Udinese in 2018. I can remember exactly where I was when I got a notification on my phone, and I stood just a couple of hundred yards from my front door, and I was frozen to the spot for I don't know, it seemed like forever. I phoned my dad. I was almost in tears. He was too, and completely in disbelief. It's not just for that, you know, because we don't know that. That's the tragedy, I suppose. It's a double tragedy. Somebody dies young, and then somebody who's involved in sport, and we imagine them to be, you know, the fittest and the best and our brightest or whatever, you know. And that's such a tragedy, and so hard to come to terms with. There's also the not knowing of what might have been, because, you know, he was certainly a player. I mean, not dissimilar to Toldo in a way that was playing for Italy, but his place was kind of, his path was blocked a bit by your other bigger names, your Chiellini, Bonucci, whatever. But, you know, just from all accounts, such a lovely, genuine guy, and just a, you know, as I say, a quiet leader of the Fiorentina team. And I think, you know, you could see the way that affected the players that were there at the time. And even, you know, now that they've gone on to other clubs, I think a lot still remember him. Fiorentina for a long time wore the armband in his honour, and they still to this day in the 13th minute, which was his shirt number, you know, they still have a round of applause in Florence. I mean, it's particularly poignant when they play Cagliari, who's the other club where he played, you know, most of his games. So, as I say, sometimes life intervenes in football, and you get a sense that we get caught up sometimes in talking about, you know, it's a tragic defeat or, you know, whatever. We get a bit hyperbolic about sporting matters, but this truly was a tragedy. And, you know, I think, as I say, you still see his picture there in Florence and on flags, and everyone remembers him. And, you know, so for me, really, there could only be one person I would want put on there.
Yeah, I'm first, I'd have been surprised if you'd picked anybody else. Come to you first, Aidan. I mean, obviously, with a player like Astori, who's actually played, I think he played more than three times as many games for Cagliari as he did for Fiorentina. But, you know, as you mentioned in the intro, it's not who's the longest serving player, it's not who scored the most goals, it's who becomes part of who find a place in the fans' heart. And clearly Astori has found a place in Giancarlo's, and we can be surprised at that.
No, totally. And he obviously had become captain that season as well, hadn't he, as well as the performance he was putting in. And as Giancarlo said, the sort of manner of his leadership might have been the more calm and quiet style rather than the ranting and raging style of some leadership. But that's as inspiring in a different way, and possibly makes people follow you all the greater, or resonates as well. And he's clearly someone who's had an impact on a lot of people, regardless of what ultimately befell him. And therefore, once that tragedy did strike, it's going to have an exponentially greater impact, of course, isn't it? And that's where being club captain, being someone whose career is clearly was clearly in a good place. He was, you know, on the fringes of the national setup, as you say. Again, slightly misfortune of the successes of others, but you know that's the way that is. But it's going to hit harder, and it's going to leave a lasting imprint on the fans. And I think that's how it is. And that's where, you know, we've talked, Giancarlo's talked there of other defensive options that could have been chosen, but that's picking who may be the best Fiorentina defender down the years. And that's not what necessarily we're after, is it? And it's what that connection, that bond, and you're never going to get a bond that lasts in the way that something as tragic as this will forge. You know, your club captain dying in the hotel the night before a league game. You know, that's going to leave a lasting imprint. And, you know, the issues, I think Italian football, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much in this here. He died of a heart issue that wasn't spotted, or was spotted but wasn't looked at properly. And then you look at more recently, Christian Eriksen wasn't allowed to remain with Inter Milan because of a heart condition. Maybe things have changed for the better because of what happened to Astori. I don't know. I might be overthinking it, but you know, there seem certain parallels in what's happened to Astori and to Eriksen, and how the rules seem to have changed of what is allowed in Italy, or what should be checked, or what how these things are dealt with. So I don't know whether that's some sort of lasting memorial to him, but equally the memorial from Fiorentina and their fans, Cagliari too, but obviously he was a Fiorentina player, Fiorentina captain when this happened. Clearly a good player, clearly an excellent player with huge prospects to go even further in the game, tragically cut short, but that will leave a lasting impression that would, he'll forever be a Fiorentina captain. Look at it that way. You know, he'll remain a Fiorentina captain. And that will never change.
Yeah, quite right. I'm happy to sort of place the defender slot on the Antonio's, Fiorentina's Mount Rushmore to Davide Astori. Interesting to ask you, Giancarlo, I was going to move on to the midfield. I mean, I always look at the options today, and my word, there are certainly plenty of midfield options. I mean, would you think this midfield one would be the most difficult choice, and who came close?
Yeah. I'd certainly, for me, this was a big struggle. I mean, I think there's some players maybe in Fiorentina's history who cross. You know, you could define them as forwards. You could define them as midfielders, I suppose. So you know that gave me a bit of leeway. But nonetheless, yeah, this was a tall order. There were a lot of great players have come through Fiorentina. I mean, I always tell people, although it's not true, that I was named after Giancarlo Di Sisti, who won the Scudetto in Florence in 1969, who was a great midfielder of that era. But again, another player that I don't personally remember, although he did come back to Fiorentina as manager. So, you know, I do have some memories of him. But moving into my own era, it's certainly, you know, really difficult. One guy who, you know, for sentimental reasons again entered the mix was Angelo Di Livio, who was the only player to, like so many clubs, Fiorentina went through financial problems and were sent down to Serie C Due, the fourth tier of Italian football. Everyone went for the exit doors, apart from Di Livio, who was an Italian international and took a pay cut. I think he ended up on something like 10% of the pay that he was on to help Fiorentina back up to where they rightly felt they belonged. So, you know, that was an example of great loyalty that, you know, again, from an ex-Juventino that, you know, comes as quite a surprise to Fiorentina fans. More recently, Borja Valero, who, you know, it slightly irks me when he's always called sort of West Brom misfit by UK pundits. But for Fiorentina, he was an absolute legend and a beautiful, beautiful player to watch on the ball. Such balance. And another man that fell in love with Florence. He's now come back to play for a little team in Florence because he loves the city so much. And they call him the sindaco, the mayor, because he's so enamoured of the city itself. So that was another bond. And then right up there, which, you know, this was, I don't know, it was like choosing your favourite child or something, this, you know, because you made me leave out Manuel Rui Costa, who, you know, I saw him play many times for Fiorentina on my trips to Italy. And then I saw him come back with Milan. And, you know, he always did the decent thing and never had a very good game against Fiorentina. And I can remember being there and applauding him off the pitch. I think he'd played a sort of 15-minute cameo when he'd come on as a substitute and, you know, just held back those pitch perfect passes that he used to hit so that Fiorentina could, because I think, you know, there was no secret that he was another one that was sold when Fiorentina went to the wall. He went west to Milan to try and help save the club that he loved. But there was a huge bond with Fiorentina there. So that was it really caused me a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth to leave out Rui Costa out, but there was one person who to me is an even greater Fiorentina legend in the midfield. So I mean, that gives you an idea of what kind of level of player we're talking about.
Indeed, I mean, as I researched earlier, I got De Livio down, and I've got Rui Costa. Also, Donga as well. I played for a short time for Fiorentina. Montelivo. There's plenty of choice there. But yeah, I think when you sort of reveal who the choice is, this guy's head and shoulders as a Fiorentina legend, isn't he?
Yeah. It's Giancarlo Antonioni. That's if people don't know when he was born and when he played, I tried to say that I was named after him. But in reality, he only started playing for Fiorentina about 5 or 6 years after I was born, so it's not actually possible unless my father, and mother could see into the future. But if I get people who don't know too much about football or Italian football, I try to pass that off. But I sort of alluded to this a bit in my intro as well, that he was one of the gods who came down from the hills into the little village that my family was from, and everyone swooned when they saw him after the World Cup. I've still got somewhere a poster signed by Giancarlo Antonioni, and I saw him play for the first time when I was maybe 11, 12 years old on a dusty, bobbly pitch in summer baked in Tuscany, and he glided across the pitch. He didn't run. He hit passes that, you know, and you see head and shoulders like that. He played with his head up all the time. That's my lasting memory of him, is that he didn't need to look down to see that the ball was at his feet. He knew it was at his feet. That was just instinctive. And, you know, the loyalty that he had to Fiorentina as well for so long, when, you know, again, you know, he said it himself that he could have had many more trophies elsewhere, but he loved Florence. Florence loved him. He nearly died on the pitch for Fiorentina when he was struck by Genoa goalkeeper Silvano Martina. And that's when Florence held its breath. I know you can't swallow your tongue, but whatever the technical thing, you know, they had to reanimate him on the pitch, and he was out for a long, long time. But he stayed faithful to Fiorentina. Fiorentina fans loved him. I mean, I think, you know, there's still flags to this day with his face on them, and, you know, that's Antonio Unico Dieci is what they call him, the only number 10. So, you know, there'd been nobody else, as I say, although Rui Costa pushed him very, very, very close and is a beautiful player. But to me, there couldn't be another choice if you're picking a name for, you know, for that midfield. It was just an age as well when I was falling in love with football, and he was, you know, he was the only non-Juventus player in the Italian national team as well. So if you didn't like Juve, who were you going to pick? It had to be Antonioni, really, and he was a classic playmaker that probably we don't see in the game anymore. Just so elegant, took a great free kick as well, and was captain for a long, long time. And you know, I don't think, you know, Fiorentina ever see the likes of that player again, really. You know, just an absolute club legend.
Yeah. I mean, I remember him playing. You just used the word elegant. I think that's absolutely sums him up. And you know, this is a guy who played for the club for 15 years, I think. But I think he's the record appearance holder for the club. The one club man. And what a player. What a player. Stevie Antonioni.
Oh, a magnificent player. Giancarlo's, is eulogising of him there is almost like, it's a requiem to him. You know, a magnificent footballer who had absolutely everything. You know, he had a turn of speed that he could use that he didn't use it very often, but when he did use it, there was this great burst of speed. But within that, it's the vision, it's the power of that right foot. It's, you know, his control of the ball. It's, you know, omnipresent on the pitch. Absolutely unbelievable. It's amazing, really, that Italy managed to win that 1982 World Cup final without him. You know, having picked up the injury in the semi-final. He was so key to Bezzot's, Italy side. And that longevity as well with Fiorentina, there would have been many, many, many offers on the table to go elsewhere. And the fact that he stayed there, you know, it just made him even more of a hero. You know, an absolutely magnificent footballer.
Yeah. Aidan?
Yeah, there's something about certain clubs that seem to inspire certain loyalty sometimes, I think. We talked about Toldo was there a long time. I think there'll be another one coming up who might have a fair bit of loyalty to the club as well. And Rui Costa's another one we mentioned. I mean, this is where your rules here, Gary, they're just too harsh. It's too unfair. We need some sort of subs bench or something like that. Because Rui Costa, you know, the guys have eulogised a bit about Antonioni then. I could eulogise about Rui Costa as well. He had that same elegance, that same style and swagger. He's the kind of player who just made things look so easy on the pitch. And he sort of forced you to look at him. You know, he's the kind of, he had that sort of charisma aura on the pitch and did everything with such style, usually with his socks down around his ankles as well, which just seems to add to the allure, I think, somehow. But he was another one who was there for quite some time, of course. Maybe it's just the kind of place that people fall in love with and want to stay. I suspect it's that there might well be something in that in terms of Florence as a place, Fiorentina fans as a fan base. It's the cradle of calcio as well, of course. You know, this is where it all began in Italy. So, you know, there's all sorts of elements to it that are the pull factors. But obviously Antonioni took it to a whole nother level. So as much as I think Rui Costa was an absolutely magnificent player, I can't argue with the pick. it's clear that this is the right one. Even if this had been before Giancarlo's time, it would have probably been something that you'd have been, you know, drawn to regardless. But obviously the fact that he came down from the hills and wowed you in the early 80s is, well, you know, that's good enough reason, even if he didn't nearly die on the pitch for Fiorentina.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, sometimes he's harsh, but it's sort of great to sort of have different opinions of players and who you think, you know, should be the chosen one. But obviously, the whole essence of this is about, you know, the guest choice, and it's great to have the debate about it. But, you know, I mean, Antonio, I mean, what a player, what a footballer. So, yeah, I mean, Rui Costa, honourable mention, but, yeah, I'd have been amazed if it's ever been this guy for the midfielder's place. So we move to the last guy, the forwards, and there again, some great players. So give me the near misses, Giancarlo, before we talk about your choice.
Yeah, it was another. They were all tough choices, but this was another one where the heart was pulled in at least two or three directions. Two of them certainly very, in fact, three of them very, very strongly. Really, going back in time again, my dad would say Kurt Hamrin would certainly have got a mention because. The little bird, as he was nicknamed in Italy, Lucellino, great winger who scored a barrel load of goals for Fiorentina. My dad saw him playing against Rangers in the Cup Winners' Cup final that Fiorentina won over two legs. He tells a story about Hamrin doing keepy uppies down the wing whilst gesticulating to the crowd, which would endear him, I imagine, to the Ibrox faithful, you know. So that kind of performance and that kind of goal contribution, you know, and another man that fell in love with Florence, really, that still stays in Tuscany. So, you know, is an amazing player. Bringing it more up to date, you know, I think these were the other two that were very close for me. Was one was Luca Toni, who, to continue the theme of naming children, that's who I tell my son that he's named after. And that, you know, it's not impossible that, and obviously was part of the World Cup winning side in 2006. And really, you know, quite an unfashionable, ungainly sort of, and got to this scene at the top level relatively late in his career. And he didn't look like, you know, didn't look like he was going to be the most graceful or agile striker, and yet he produced, I mean, in one particular season, but you know, right across his time at Fiorentina, he produced some amazing goals for a big sort of relatively gangly man. He was remarkably coordinated, but prior to him, and I think far and away the closest rival was Roberto Baggio, who I chose to include as a forward. I could have put him as a midfielder, I guess, but he scored so many goals that, you know, and we nursed him in Florence, nursed him through injury, signed him from Vicenza, and then 2 days later, he was still playing with Vicenza, he got a bad injury, had an operation on his knee, struggled to come back, but Fiorentina honoured the deal because he was such a talent, and, you know, he spent 5 years in Florence, although he didn't play the full 5 years, but you could see what an amazing talent he was, and obviously at Italia 90, I think the world began to get an inkling of what level of talent he was. And, you know, a player who I don't think, you know, I'd say Rui Costa, I don't think we'd have left Florence if it hadn't been for financial reasons. I think the same was probably true for Baggio. He said it himself in his book that, you know, he would have stayed where he gives of his best, or where he gave of his best, was where he felt loved, where he settled. And so that was Fiorentina, Bologna, Brescia, really. He'd never quite felt the same unconditional love at the big clubs that he played for. Not that he didn't play amazingly well for them, but, you know, I think he would have stayed if it hadn't been that Fiorentina were going to change ownership. And he was basically told, you know, that, you know, you need to go so I can sell the club on to the next owner. So, as I say, not quite as hard as perhaps picking between Rui Costa and Antonioni, but leaving the divine ponytail on the sidelines was pretty difficult as well.
Oh, Beth. When we talk about we leaving Baggio on the spot on the sideline, and Curtis Hamrin, who you mentioned, who scored, I know, more than 200 goals in 360-odd league games for from the wing position, not even the central striker, you know, there's some. But I know there's a particular member of the these Football Times collective who would be screaming his head off if this guy you're going to tell us now wasn't chosen as the Fiorentina forward and the only non-Italian player in your four. So tell me who he is, Giancarlo.
It'll surprise absolutely nobody that it's Gabriel Omar Batistuta, one of the greatest players I've ever seen play. He was a pleasure to see him play live on a number of occasions in Florence. And there was nothing quite like him. I've never seen a striker like him. In his pomp, he was a force of nature. And you felt when he got the ball, you know, it didn't matter what was between him and the goal, really. It would all be going out the way defenders. The ball would carry the goalkeeper into the net. It didn't matter. You know, that was happening. There was an inexorable path from the ball at his foot to the back of the net, and nothing was going to stop him. And to be in Florence when the chant went up, Batty goal, it still puts I don't have much hair left, but you know, what's on the back of my neck still stands up on end at the thought of that, because there was such a bond, such a love between Florence and Batty, and he was the undisputed leader of that team, and curiously, you know, when he was signed, the Fiorentina signed two Argentinians at the same time. They signed Diego Latorre and they signed Batistuta, and they actually thought that Latorre was the better player. You know, he was going to be the man that they were going to build a team around for years to come. Well, you know, the rest is history. Loyalty again, he stayed when the club was relegated to Serie B. He could have gone elsewhere, he didn't. He stayed, and that, you know, won his place in the heart of fans even more so. And then just goals. He scored goals. I mean, there was that spell, I'm sure anybody that watched Football Italia on Channel 4 would remember Peter Brackley, you know, interrupting games. He was either commentating on them or he would let you know the score and he would say, it's that man Batistuta again. He had a run, you know, which still an Italian record of scoring in the opening 11 or 12 games, I can't remember. You know, and he just, you knew, there was no doubt that, you know, even when Fiorentina were struggling, probably Batistuta would dig you out of trouble because he would score a goal, and he scored them always. Right foot, left foot, header. Delicate finishes sometimes as well. You know, I've done them a disservice making it sound like they were all absolute thunderous strikes. But, you know, the most memorable ones definitely were. The ones where he silenced the Camp Nou, the one where he scored against the Manchester United, against Arsenal, where he one touch knocked it past a man and absolutely thundered it into the net. All these are just the stuff of legend. So, you know, it's sorry to the divine ponytail, but you know, there was only one Batty goal.
Couldn't argue with you, mate. I mean, I just couldn't argue. I mean, the guy scored 167 goals in 167 goals in 269 Serie A games in the, you know, the most sort of difficult league in Europe to score goals in. This guy rattled him in like there's no tomorrow. Obviously, he also won the Coppa Italia with Toldo in 96. Aiden, Batty goal. Would he get the number 9 shirt for Newcastle?
Would he ever? I what a player. We had a great discussion about this on the Fiorentina magazine podcast about Batistuta and Baggio. And again, this is it's another one where you could say, well, look at the great player that we've left out, but you can't argue with it because Batistuta for Fiorentina was just something more. We talked on that magazine one about the sort of explosive nature of him and how it always seemed to be this way. It was also high energy, high octane stuff, it seemed, with Batistuta, right? Always highly expressive as well as explosive. And he's the reason, as I mentioned then, why I went to see Fiorentina at Wembley in the against Arsenal in the Champions League, and also Argentina at Wembley against England in a drab game. But I saw him do better in the violet shirt than he did in the stripes. But he's the type of person, when you think of him, you can only see him other than in Argentina stripes, in the violet. You know, I know he's worn Roma kit, and he obviously played a couple of other places in his earlier days. But, you know, the kit you see when you see Batistuta is the sort of the glorious violet with the sort of white tabs down the side and you know, the iconic Fiorentina kit. That's where he, in your mind's eye, he's synonymous with. That's where him as a player is. And we talk about bonds and loyalty and so on. You know, someone who stays with a club when they get demoted, relegated through misfortune, mismanagement, poor play, whatever, you know, someone who stays with them through that, you know, how better to cement yourself as a club legend than that? You know, fans latch onto to things like that. That makes you one of them. It makes you one of their own. No matter where in the world you hail from, it cements you to the locality, to the people, to the club, to its very identity. And that's what Batistuta is to me. The fact that he then, on top of all of that, scored such an incredible total of goals, as you said there, Gary, in a time, I guess it wasn't quite as harsh as it was in the 80s for goal scoring, but it wasn't far off. It was still very much the pinnacle of European football, club football in those days in terms of the league. So he was doing this against the very best, week in, week out, at the very top of his game. As much as I love Baggio, and his Fiorentina tale is a remarkable one as well. You know, the whole coming back with Juventus, refusing to take the penalty, going off and picking up the Fiorentina scarf, and the various comments he'd made about his own feelings about Fiorentina. I couldn't make a case for picking Baggio over Batistuta when it comes to this at all. It's clearly the right choice. He is the Fiorentina man, undoubtedly.
Yeah. It comes to something when we say this guy is above Baggio, and we're not even sort of saying there's that much of a debate about it. I mean, Steve, the guys who stick the ball in the onion bag at the end of the day, I suppose, are the prime deliverers of trophies and success. And, you know, Batistuta, is he the top echelon of strikers across the last sort of 60, 70, 80 years?
He's way up there. You know, you think of goals in Italy from that period of time, and Batistuta's, you know, the go-to player, really. He was the heir to Van Basten in that respect. You know, in a league that was notoriously difficult to clock up goals, you know, you'd have top scorers that would barely scrape into, you know, 10, 12, maybe 15 if they were lucky. And then along comes Batistuta in mid-20s. You know, this was, you know, the high benchmark of European world club football. You know, the Serie A of the 1980s and the 1990s, I doubt it will ever be eclipsed. You know, it was fantasy football. It's a land where Maradona, you know, was playing his trade, Zico, and then along came the next generations. And, you know, Batistuta was just an utter force of nature. He was goals. You know, he was a guarantee of goals. And again, he's got that essence of Antonioni and that. That longevity at the club, that dedication to stick it out there, you know, to go down into Serie B with them and stay and fight to get them back up. And then not even to do that, but to go up in the following season, first season back up, he scores more goals in Serie A than he did in Serie B the previous season, where you think he should be able to score 15, 20 goals more, you know, and then a year later wins the cup. You know, a wonderful, wonderful player. And yeah, he's the only choice for this team in this position in this podcast.
So Batistuta fills the forwards place, and if my chisel breaks when I'm trying to chip away his features, I'm sure I can borrow his white boots, because that'll take away the rock and roll problem at all. So we've gone through the four positions. So we've got Francesco Toldo as a goalkeeper, Davide Astori as defender, Giancarlo Antonioni as the midfielder, and Batistuta as a forward. So the only task left for you now, Giancarlo, is to tell me who Mr. Fiorentino is. I know you can sort of go out one of those players or somebody else, but I guess of the three outfield players, they've all got a case for different reasons. So who would you go for, Mr. Fiorentino?
This, although, you know, I've had a lot of the decisions have been difficult, this wasn't that difficult to me, because I think just anybody, any Fiorentina fan with, you know, a reasonable knowledge of the history of the club anyway, would say Giancarlo Antonioni. I don't think he, regardless of, you know, Batistuta would be the only player that would push him close, I think. And obviously, if you were a fan who hadn't seen Antonioni play, then you would probably go for Batistuta. But to me, the two are just synonymous, really. It would be impossible to go for anybody else for the number of appearances, for the loyalty to the club, to the, you know, just that especially that fact, as I say, that he was, you know, he was the Fiorentina's, he was the only non-Juventino in the Italian national team. And he just, he came to represent Florence, I think. That was, you know, and the fans used to say, you know, you can win the title, but we've got Antonioni. And I don't think, you know, it was similar with Batistuta, but it wasn't quite the same. So to me, if you're saying Mr. Fiorentina, certainly to fans of my generation and older, it could only be Giancarlo Antonioni. As I said, you know, we've been blessed really to have players like that in our history, you know, to see players like that, you know, and the players that I've mentioned play for Fiorentina. As I say, we don't win much in the way of trophies or titles, but we always like to think from sort of Antonioni through Baggio to Batistuta, we like to think that we've got a player that all of Italy envies. And there was no player stayed longer and was more envied by the rest of Serie A than Giancarlo Antonioni.
Yeah, it's interesting to recall you mentioned that it's a bit a wonderful surprise if a player like that turned up at the Stadio Artemio Franchi again. But I think it'd be a wonderful surprise for Nicola if a player like that turned up anywhere, to be honest. I mean, Stevie, does Giancarlo make a compelling case, or is the emotional case for a story more compelling, or what about Batistuta? What do you think?
I think there's a lot of rivals, a lot of compelling rivals. There's a hell of a lot of talent that's not made the cut here. You know, it's pretty outrageous across the board, really, with this team. You know, like no other in that respect, to have this level of, you know, this luxury, you know, back catalogue of heroes, yet, you know, not being able to kind of pull it together to win the trophies. You know, there's something glorious about them, yet gloriously frustrating about them at the same time. And it doesn't matter who, you know, we said it when we did the podcast for the magazine, that I think no matter who, you know, anyone will say their favourite Italian club is, or, you know, will claim allegiance to one Italian club or another, then, you know, Fiorentina tends to be, you know, at the very least, the second favourite club of most, because of that kit, because of that colour. And no one represented it better than Antonioni. You know, he was Fiorentina in the same, you know, in a, an even more pronounced manner than Batistuta was. You know, he was just absolutely everything. You know, he was an absolute work of art as a footballer.
Sure, yeah. I'm coming to you. I'm going to borrow a little line from Prince and ask you, who should be the king of the purple rain?
Very good, very good. It's definitely a generational thing. If Giancarlo was 20 odd years younger, possibly his answer would have been different. It would be interesting if we have some of these chats with people of different ages at the same club to see how different the picks would be. Probably the actual picks wouldn't be particularly different. Maybe the someone who didn't know so much about the history of the club or hadn't lived that period would have picked Rui Costa, perhaps. It seems unlikely, though, even still, given how much Antonioni obviously means to Fiorentina. He's a not quite a one club man, but he is a one club man in to all intents and purposes. You know, there was a little spell somewhere else at the beginning, and there was a couple of years in Switzerland at the end, which, you know, you can easily forget that they ever happened, because to all intents and purposes, he was a one club man, and that's you know, that's how it's remembered, that's how it will remain. You know, there's all sorts of stars of big clubs who've had the odd year or two at the end of their careers somewhere else. That doesn't change the fact that they are that club that they were with the entire time prior to that. And that's what Antonioni is. I think there's for all the great players Fiorentina have had, and we've talked about some who've missed the cut, some incredible players, it's impossible to argue with any of the picks. And again, when it comes to this final thing, again, impossible to argue. I think, again, generationally, perhaps that's where somebody might pick Batistuta, but that would be, I think, missing the wider point of what Antonioni was to Fiorentina. So I'm fully behind this decision. Get them all carved, Gary.
Full house. Full house. Yeah. I mean, this is, I mean, we've done a number of these podcasts now about Mount Rushmore and various clubs, and perhaps this is one where we've looked at so many high-profile entrancing players, and, you know, the discussion is fantastic about it. So massive thanks, Giancola, for coming on and giving us your choices and allowing us to debate with you about it. And amazingly, at the end of the day, everybody seems to agree with you anyway, mate. So I know it's all a bit of personal opinion, but you seem to have got them right, buddy. So thanks very much for coming on to the podcast.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I could talk Fiorentina forever, really. And if you ever need a Queen of the South one, that'll be a more niche publication, I suspect. I can wax lyrical about them as well. But no, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, bless you. Well, if the Queen of the South rise again, mate, then drop me a line, we'll put you up for series three. Stevie, enjoyed it?
Oh, an absolute ball. You know, what a team, what a guest. You know, so many iconic players to be able to discuss here. You know, that's just been a brilliant, brilliant way to spend, well, the best part of an hour and a quarter. Been a joy.
Time flies when you enjoy yourself, doesn't it? Aidan, enjoyed it, buddy?
Very much so. Fiorentina are the kind of club that just hit our sweet spot, don't they? Yeah. You know, the same when we were talking magazines and how much they were requested by so many people as a magazine topic. So therefore, I'm sure this pod is going to be hugely popular as well and stir the debate too, because it's such an iconic club. The kit, the stadium, everything about it, and all these characters that we've talked about just add to the legend. So fantastic pod. Really, really enjoyed it.
Fantastic, guys. So all that's left for me to say is thank you for the listeners for listening in, and to ask you to catch us for the next episode of Mount Rushmore, when we'll be inviting another guest come on and give us their choices for their own club's Mount Rushmore. Thanks. Bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.